Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester with me, Clint Boone. Every week, we'll be celebrating the spirit of Manchester by speaking to somebody who's helped shape the city. This week, I'm joined by Ricky Hatton, MBE, former 3-time light welterweight and welterweight champion of the world, promoter, trainer, charity patron and mental health speaker. He's going to tell us about his journey into boxing and realising his dreams.
When I first laced the boxing gloves on, or kicked off on the journey of trying to be something, never thought that this would ever happen.
And he's going to tell us about his struggle with mental health during his boxing career.
If I had people think to me, look at him now, big time Ricky Hatton, he's forgot about all us, it would kill me. It would absolutely kill me. I'd chuck all the belts at the bin if I thought people thought that of me.
It's a great pleasure to welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester a man who became one of the most beloved and inspirational British sportsmen of all time, and a man who completely symbolises the spirit of the city, Ricky Hatton. How are you?
Great to be here. Good to speak to you, Jim.
Ricky Hatton, MBE.
MBE. Never thought I'd get one of them when I first started lacing the gloves on, but a lot of things what I did in my life was pinch your time tackle, you know, so yeah. Been a good ride and... very, very proud of the support I got, mainly from Manchester, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll talk about your career, obviously. And I must point out, we're actually sat in the middle of Ricky Hatton's actual boxing ring in his gym in Hyde, just outside Manchester.
Yeah, I'm still sat on my arse now, so. But, still proud for me. I'm very proud. I could have probably put this gym anywhere in the country, you know, because of the success and the love I had from so many people up and down the country. But I've always been close to my roots, you know what I mean? I was born 5 minutes down the road in Hattersley, so it was only ever going to be in this area, to be honest with you. I'm very proud of where I come from, yeah.
I totally agree with what you just said, but you could have settled probably anywhere in the world. You could have settled in America and done this, couldn't you?
With the
profile that you've attained over
the years. Yeah,
with
the fights with Mayweather and Pacquiao and Castillo and Costa-Zoo, even though I won that fight in Manchester, which was my best win. He was a real household name in America. So yeah. I mean, and even now when I go to America, just been over there with Tyson Fury when he fought for the world title, and it's amazing when you walk down the road and you're halfway across the world and people from halfway across the world still recognise you. You know, makes you feel very proud.
It's a brilliant thing. Let's talk about your childhood. You're born in 1978.
I was born in Stockport. Stepping Hill Hospital. We lived in Hayfield, but my mum and dad were from Hattersley. And pretty much, if I consider myself a Hattersley lad. I mean, I was always, trained in Manchester and just Hattersley, just right on the outskirts of Manchester. But if people say, you know, where was I born? You know, even though it was Stockport, I'd always, like to say Hattersley. I went to school there. Mm. All my present friends are still there. The same mates I've always had from day one. And I haven't moved probably... since my whole life, I've probably not moved out of a 6 or 7 mile radius period. You know what I mean? So,
I think that's normal for a lot of working class people in these parts. Like my family, the same. They've not moved that far outside of the 5-6 miles radius. But for a superstar in his profession like you, it is more unusual for you to be still living in those same streets, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose so. I mean, I got everything I dreamed of. You know, when I think. the gym that I come to work every day that we're sat in now. And I look, you know, when I come driving to work every morning, makes me feel proud. I'm always, I never forget, you know what they, where it come from, you know, this gym. Mm. You know, and I've got the house I always dreamed of, you know, I've got the car I always dreamed of, you know, but I never, you know, most people would probably move to areas in and around Manchester, which, you know, like Audley Edge or somewhere like that. And, you know, and there's nothing wrong with them places. Got lots of friends from up there. But it just wasn't for me. I think if I moved in Audley Edge, I think give it a fortnight, all the for sale signs will be going up on all the houses. But no, I've got everything I dreamed of, but here I'm close to my family, I'm close to my friends, the friends I went to school with. And, you know, even before anybody knew Ricky, and I had a lot of support from around this Hattersley Hyde and Tameside area, and the Manchester area in general. So I never really wanted to move too far afield here.
And people in these parts have a perception of Hattersley as being one of those pretty tough council estates to grow up on. Is that how it was for you in the early 80s?
It was, yeah, to be honest with you. I mean, the school I went to, Hattersley School, you know, Hattersley High School, did me no harm whatsoever, you know what I mean? I think Hattersley, you know, has the reputation because... And this area in particular has a few bad incidents that seem to hog the limelight. You know, we had the Moors murders from Hattersley years ago. And in more recent years, just down the road, we had Dr. Harold Shipman. And then there was the shooting of the two police ladies on Hattersley Estate, you know, at the Tesco supermarket. So these they're always going to grab, you know, the limelight or the highlight, if you like, of the area. But some of the nicest people you'll meet, you know, are from Hattersley, and that's why I've chosen to stay around in the area. And, you know, I'd like to think, you know, of an area that has had nothing. You know, it always used to upset when people used to call Hattersley and Hyde because I'm, you know, from that area. Mm. But I think, you know, sometimes when they mention all them things, they might chuck my name in and put a bit of good back into the... area, and he's still trying to do so in the sense that my gym has brought a lot of jobs to the area. You know, a lot of people come here every day and train. You know, a lot of people have a lot of happy times here, and I'm still trying to give a little bit back, even though I'm not slinging the hooks, as they say now. Yeah.
How do you get on at school?
Never really took an exam, to be honest with you, and I still see some of the teachers that I went to school with knocking about, and they always say to me, you know, Ricky, you was never no trouble at school. There was never no trouble in you, no miver, no trouble, no fighting. You was no trouble at school. You just never used to do nothing. And that was it, basically. And I tell my son, Campbell, and even all the, you know, when I go around to schools, I'm speaking to the kids and stuff like that, you know, not everyone can be a boxer, not everyone can be a professional footballer, not everyone can be a TV star or anything like that, or a singer. But, you know, you know, if I hadn't become a boxer, I wouldn't have been, I don't know what I'd have done, you know what I mean? Jobs are hard these days. I don't know what I'd have done if I hadn't been fortunate to be a boxer because I was so... Not bad at school, because I was so bone idle at school. You know, I always said, I'm going to be a boxer. And if I hadn't done, I'd have found myself in a whole heap of trouble, you know. So you've got to, it's like my son now, Campbell, he goes to college, you know, he studies sports science, you know. He's got himself two little part-time jobs. He's boxing himself now, and he's done it off his own back. And I think that's what you've got to do. You know, you may have a goal of dreaming of being something, but there's no guarantee you're going to get there. So you've got to try and keep your, you know, few irons in the pot, if you like, type thing, yeah.
And when you're growing up then, who are the people that most inspired? Not just boxers, but musicians, other sportsmen, actors, comedians. Who are the people that you looked up to?
Well, you know, Muhammad Ali was obviously a very, very iconic people. I used to look up to, I was always a big Manchester City fan, and although at the time I was growing up, we was hopeless. But at the time, I say. But yeah, but there was so many people around Manchester. I mean, the Oasis boys were coming to the forefront just as I was breaking through as well. We sort of like come through together.
Yeah.
And they were big inspiration because I loved the music. You know, I always used to have my music in the gym when I was training, when I was fighting. And I'm very fortunate that I've become friends of them. But just not through the, you know, they're a little bit like me, really. What you see, what you get, a little bit of rough and ready. But, you know, they've proved that, you know, people from council estates, whether it be boxing, music, we can do it. And that's what it was. And they've become friends for me. And I think, you know, when I'm at Manchester City now, you know, I'm very fortunate. I've met the manager and I've met some of the players and friends with some of the players and stuff like that. And it's, you know, unbelievable, because when I grew up, I wanted to be a world champion. I wanted to listen to Oasis and support Manchester City. And I've sort of like ticked all the boxes in. Noel and Liam carried the belts in. You know, they welcome me at the club. You know, I'm just sort of like one of the regular faces round there at the club. And as I said earlier, when I first laced the boxing gloves on, or kicked off on the journey of trying to be something, never thought that this would ever happen.
Another one of your heroes was similar rags to riches story, wasn't it? From a boy family in America, Elvis Presley.
Absolutely. Well, my place is called the Heartbreak Hotel.
That's your house, yeah.
I had it registered as a Heartbreak Hotel, and it has had a bare bit of heartbreak over the years, because, I mean, you know, I was a very much, you know, successful story to then that bit of a downward spiral story to being back on top and successful again. So in them four walls over the years, it's not just been, you know, holding your trophies up, having a pint of Guinness and having a few parties. There's been a few sad times as well. And so it's very, very fitting. You know, I've always been a big Elvis fan. Went to Memphis to watch Lennox Lewis versus Mike Tyson, and we called in at Graceland. And a big Elvis fan, big Johnny Cash fan. He sings about doom and gloom and moody and stuff like that, you know. And I've had so many smiles and so many frowns in my life, and each and every one of them, whether it be the good times or the bad times, have made me the person I am today.
How did you get into the boxing then? When did that start? When did that become, not an escape, is that the right word, an escape from what you were in and what you could become?
Not really, you know. Most people, you know, you know, I come from Hattersley Estate. And as much as I love Hattersley Estate, sometimes when you leave school, there's a couple of roads you can go down, isn't there? You can either go on and try and do better, or you can go into like the usual thing, what the high majority of people on council estates do. But I was very, very fortunate that, you know, we I come from a good family. Wasn't you know, we wasn't loaded. We was far from rich, but we never really wanted for anything. My mum and dad worked very, very, very hard. So I never, like council estates or in America ghettos or anything like that, I never sort of like had to fight my way out of poverty, if you like, you know, type thing. Or I wasn't a bad kid where I was going, you know, I was robbing and stealing and you know, fighting on the streets and stuff like that. It certainly wasn't the case. I did kickboxing first, because as a youngster I used to love Bruce Lee films. Absolutely loved the Bruce Lee films. So then I went to do kickboxing and had a bit of go of kickboxing and Thai boxing, and I just wasn't very good with my feet because I've always been a little shorty. So I found I had a talent with my fists, but because I was so short and stocky, I was getting my head kicked in. So then I had my kickboxing coach, so why don't you go over to the boxing club and give that a go? And it basically went from there. But I think whether you do kickboxing or boxing, it's a very acquired taste sport, really, you know. Your first time you get hit on the chin or belted, you either like it or you don't. And I fell in love with it, funny enough. And then it basically went from there. I started winning a few national titles, and then I boxed for England as a schoolboy. And then I started going around the gyms, professional gyms in Manchester, and people started saying really good things about me. And I thought, well, if these people are saying I've got half a chance, and that's what gave me the belief to carry on and take it on a little bit more full time.
And you had an amazing career, didn't you? About 48 fights, you won 45, 32 of those were knocking people out.
Yeah, well, you know, two of the defeats were from probably modern day greats, and probably arguably two of the best of all time in Pacquiao and Mayweather. And the other defeat was only when I decided to make me comeback, like any fighter. You know, you sit on your settee thinking, have I got one more, have I got one more? Mm. And I thought, well, I've got myself and my life back on track and I'm healthy and everything, let's give it another go, because you don't want to look back on your career and say, you know, any regrets. So I made me comeback, and I found out that I hadn't got it anymore, you know, and I was able to move on with me the rest of my life from there on in, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's one of them comeback fights where I've not made a comeback and I got beat up and bashed up and stuff like that, you know. I got the answers I wanted to find out. There's a lad that beat me maybe a few years ago, he probably wouldn't have done, you know, and that, you know, sort of like told me, like, listen, Ricky, you've got to go into retirement now and look down another route.
And at the peak, it was phenomenal, wasn't it, seeing tens of thousands, literally, British followers getting on planes to come and see your box over in the States.
It was incredible, the following that.
Were you worried at the time? Did you look around and think, it's a bit bonkers, this?
No, I always had good support from day one. But when it got to the fights in America and the Vegas fights, it was like nothing that we've never ever seen. And I'm proud to say this, I hope no one thinks bad of me, for any British boxer that there's ever been. I mean, Frank Bruno, my friend, went over to Las Vegas, you know, for fights with Tyson. There was 10,000, was. And, you know, I think the least I had was 10,000 that went over there. Like, you know what I mean? For the, like, I think 10,000 went for the Castillo fight. And then for the Mayweather fight, it was like 30,000. Pacquiao fight was 20,000. Malignaggi fight was 15,000. You know, I'm not saying I'm the greatest British fight there's ever been, but nobody has ever had support like that. But I had support from Manchester from day one. There was a couple of fighters that were also coming round at the same time. There was me, Michael Gomez, and Anthony Farnell, who were there from the Colliestown Moston boxing gym in Manchester. And we were both coming up at the same time, and we were all intercontinental titles. We were all fighting on the same bill. We were topping the bill at Bowlers. We were topping the bill in Wigan, just down the road, and places like that. And we were building up a fan base together. And but I think, I don't know whether it was my style and, you know, and the way I was body punching. And obviously because of the wins that I had a little bit further on, was my fan base, instead of being just local, went nationally then, if you like, you know, and it just spread from there. But we did it together, me, Michael Gomez, Anthony Farnell, Jamie Moore was another fighter. He's a very good trainer in Manchester now. He's doing brilliant in the Oliver's gym up there with all the boys. So it's, you know, I think me, Michael, Jamie, Anthony Farnell helped make Manchester boxing what it is a little bit today, really, because the champions return out in Manchester now for this little city, seen as the British capital of boxing, yeah. Manchester, you know what I mean? And it's from people like Gomez and like Farnell and like myself, like Jamie Moore, Michael Brody, Ensley Bingham, Carl Thompson, you know what I mean? We people have looked at us coming up, kids looked at us as we were coming through, and that's why the amateur gyms and everywhere's packed now. I think it come from them early days.
Brought a bit of character to it as well, didn't you? But yeah. The funny thing is, that even at your peak, you were sort of famous for, when it was fight time, you'd become toned and focused and fit. And then as soon as the fight was done, you'd just start partying.
Yeah.
Was that because that's just wanting to have a normal life like your mates, rather than being hedonistic and lack of self-control? It's more, I want to party because I'm a human being. I'm from Atters. I wanted to go for a drink with mates.
Yeah, little bit of both, really. I mean, I always... you know, I always wanted to be a world champion. I always wanted the things to come with being a world champion. Nice house for my family and, you know, try and provide for my family and stuff like that, which I'm very proud to say I did. But I always had a little bit of a, you know, bit of a paranoia side to me, in the sense that, you know, when I started being successful, and I could never get my head around when stories were in the paper of me, you know, how well I've done, and I was on TV with the fights. And, I always crazed that. I've got to go to an Attersley for a pint. I've got to go for a pint in the Aero Tavern. I've got to go for a pint in the New Inn, because I don't want people thinking I've forgot my roots. That was always something that was really, you know, if I had people thinking to me, say, look at him now, big time Ricky Hart, and he's forgot about all us, it would kill me. It would absolutely kill me. I'd chuck all the belts at the bin if I thought people thought that of me. And I've always tried to maintain that closeness to the area and to my fans, and, you know, and to that. And I think that's why they support me. You never got me on a red carpet. You never got me on in the jungle. You never got me at this. You never got me there. Just never entertained me. And I think, you know, I think I just remained close to my roots. You know, here's Ricky. He goes watching City. He would sit on the stand with a pie and a Bovril. You know what I mean? He'll play darts in the pub with his mates having a pint. And that's nothing has changed, even though life has changed a great deal for me with what I've achieved. I still do that stuff today. And I think that's why people have always supported me, because I think the fans that support me, whether it was Manchester, London, Sheffield, Leeds, Yorks, anywhere, the fans could relate to me. We'll go and watch him. He's a Jack the Lad. He's a character. He's a laugh a minute. He's a rum little so-and-so. Do you know what I mean? We'll go and support him. And he's not bad to watch as well. So I think, all things considered, I think that's why I had the fan base, because they could all relate to me. Yeah. He's one of us.
You had a few years after, before you did the comeback. So 2009, you stopped boxing. 2010, you started having problems. You went into rehab for addiction and booze. That must have been a pretty dark time. How did you get through that? Did you still feel that support that you had?
Always had a lot of support there, but I think the thing with depression, mental health and stuff like that, you know, you didn't mention mental health back then because everyone thought you was a nutcase, you know, but now it's becoming more prominent and more, you know, people see it as a proper illness. But I used to get proper depressed, and I used to get depressed early on in my career, you know what I mean? I used to walk down the street paranoid, as I mentioned earlier before we've been speaking. I used to think to myself, I used to be walking down the street and I was getting paranoid that people think, look at him big time now, you know what I mean? That was sort of like me. And if I felt that way, I'd get down and depressed on it.
Yeah.
But it sort of like started when the Mayweather fight came along. That was the first defeat of my career. And I've, you know, 30,000 fans went over to Vegas, and, you know, I thought all these fans have come over to support me now, and I've paid all that money and I've let them down and I've got beaten. It doesn't matter whether people say, well, it's Floyd Mayweather, Rick, come on, you know, don't give yourself an hard time, give yourself a break. It doesn't matter to me. I generally felt like that. So then when I was walking out, because of the depression that I had, I was walking down the street thinking, look, is everyone laughing at me? Is everyone disappointed? Is everyone, you know? And that was sort of like the start, really. I made a comeback fight at the City of Manchester Stadium against Juan Lescano, where 60,000 turned up to support me in my comeback fight from Manchester, because I was thinking of chucking it in. And then the best way the fans could, you know, support me and get behind me was 60,000 of them turned up.
Was that the biggest ever crowd for a British boxing match? Was that a record?
I think it might have been at the time. I know Cal Flock and George Groves boxed each other in Wembley, and I think they got about 80,000 or 100,000, but, you know, I think mine was against Juan Lescano. Nobody in Manchester or Britain had ever heard of Juan Lescano, I mean, so to get 60,000, and I think there was 50,000 gone before the opponent was announced.
Yeah.
But the manner of my performance wasn't great, you know, it wasn't one of my best performances, so I was really trying to, you know, should I pack this in now? And then I fought Paulie Malignaggi in Las Vegas, and it was my best win since I beat Kostyuzu in Manchester to win the Undisputed title. And it sort of like redeemed my confidence in that I was right to carry on. But my frame of mind was going up and down. I was down for the Mayweather fight, you know, down for the City fight. Then I was up for the Malignaggi fight. And then around that time, I fell out with my mum and dad. And I fell out with Billy Graham also, who was my trainer, which I'm very proud to say me and Billy have realised that the reason for the fallout wasn't our fault now, and we're mates again now, which is lovely, because, I mean, if I can't celebrate these great times without Billy Graham, I don't want to celebrate them. But, yeah. And I fell out with my mum and dad, so this was after the Malignaggi fight, so I was up for the Malignaggi fight. Then I was back down again, and then I got destroyed by Manny Pacquiao. So then I sort of like reached a stadium in life where I didn't care whether I lived or died. I really, really didn't.
Because you were suicidal, weren't you, with it?
Well. Massively, yeah. And I mean, not just every day when I went to the pub for a few beers. If you got depression, you've got to be careful with the drinking. It just makes things all the worse.
Yeah.
But I was, whether I went to the pub or whether I went to a night, even if I just had like a couple of hours on my own where I could ponder things, I was wanting to kill myself. I was getting the knives out and I was thinking, how am I going to do it? Should I jump in front of a train? Should I do this? And I never had the bottle to go through with it. I wanted to go with it. I was crying and crying. I used to say to myself, God, you was a champion getting through so many of them fights and you can't do this one little thing. You're so-and-so. And it was a real, real horrid, terrible, terrible, terrible time for me.
Yeah. I've seen what depression does. I've seen it firsthand, and it's like having a really, really nasty next door neighbour that never really moves out of town, and it's always there. Do you find that doing what you're doing now, you're still in the ring? We're literally sat in a ring now. This is your day to day, is training other people to be boxers, helping them to become boxers. Does that sort of positive thing help to keep that stuff at bay?
Keep that nasty neighbour away. Yeah, you've got
to
find positive things to do. Like I said, when you have depression, you know what I mean, you know, and if you go for the beer with depression, once you've had a few beers, you feel right as rain. But then when you get up in the morning, it's worse. And that's what we've found with mental health now. That's what medication does. You know, when Frank Bruno got sectioned a few years ago, just give him a tablet just to ease the pain for a few hours. Mm. But you don't ease it full stop. You're just putting it on the side for a few hours or a few days, but it always comes back. So you've got to find positive things to do in your life now. And when you think, you know, once you've once you've boxed in front of 60,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 going over to Las Vegas, you know, singing there's only one Ricky Hatton, and then all of a sudden that's not there no more, that's a hard void to fill. That's the biggest drug you'll ever have. Mm-hmm. You know, 40,000 fans drinking Las Vegas dry and taking over the place. You know, that's that's never going to be replaced, but you've got to replace it. Otherwise, you know, you go under. And I replaced it. You know, I had a little baby girl that wasn't planned. She came along. That made me feel better about myself. I started becoming, I'm a boxing trainer now, and the lads that I train are like my second family. Yep. Do you know what I mean? You know, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes from where I was years ago. I know it means so much to them, so I throw every punch for him in the corner. My son Campbell's coming on great. He's boxing as well now. I go doing motivational speeches about, you know, mental health and stuff like that. I see that as much of my job now, so yeah, nobody gets to the bad place where I was. And I think my days are full now, and yeah, it's full doing positive stuff. And I think that's the big thing what we've all got to do. You know what I mean? You know, you can't do football forever, you can't act forever, you can't play music forever, you can't box forever. Sooner or later, when that goes, and when you've had that such high doing, you know, cause I mean, as hard as boxing was, I loved it. You know, and, you know, not many people get a job they love, and I got it. And then when it went, it was very hard, but you've got to fill your time with positive things.
Yeah, totally relate to all that. Let's talk about Manchester. As you said, you're very much based here. It's obvious from what you said that your roots are always going to be in this part of town. Attersley, Hyde, probably 8 or 9 miles outside the city. How do you see the spirit of this part of the world in general?
I just think it's, you know, it's the mad for the sport. You know, we're mad for our sport. We're very proud of our area. We're down to earth people. Do you know what I mean? There's, what you see is what you get. And that's not just for, say, Ricky Hatton as an individual, or Nolan Liam, or this or that. I think that's the gist of every household in Manchester. We're pretty much, you know, down to earth. We, you know, when the bombing, you know, in the Manchester Arena, you know, and when I think that moment, as heartbreaking as it was, if you could sum up Manchester in one, you know, one
chapter
of how, you know, this little small city, you know, in the world, how we pulled together and dragged together and supported each other and dragged each other through that moment. I think that's just something that just sums Manchester up in general. There's been loads of things that have gone on in Manchester and that, but, you know, that's just another thing where you go, look, that's what we're about. Mm. Just look how we pulled together. Look how we all got through that. Look how we supported each other. And that's happened. You know, it doesn't happen. Things don't, as tragic as that, don't happen that often in Manchester. But when they do, we rally like no city in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's because of the people, not because of anything else. It's because of the people.
Tell us about the Barnabas charity. It's a Manchester-based charity that helps homeless people with a lot of them have mental health issues or addictions. And you're a patron for Barnabas, aren't you?
I am, yeah. It's I feel so sorry when I got, and it's getting worse, the homeless situation. And it's not through the want of trying, because we try really, really hard. And I feel sorry for you. You know, you see these people on the streets, you know, they've got no money, they've got no food, they've got no this. But more importantly, they've got no family. And more like at the present time, you know, with Christmas coming along, you know, and you're going down there in Manchester, you know, and we're all on works dues, and we're all on, you know, this, and we're after work, we're having a few Christmas drinks with our pals. And you see these people there, I haven't got no money, no food, and no family. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I fell out with my parents, and I haven't spoken to my parents for 7 or 8 years. But Christmas is a time that is always very, very hard for me. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter, you know, who's been right, who's been wrong, you know what I mean? I stand by my decision to do what I do. But it's still a tough one for me at Christmas, because Christmas is all about the family, isn't it? And when I say these people on the street, homeless, with no families, no nothing at Christmas times, it really does feel a lot for me. And to be honest, people, so, you know, I invest my money into the Barnabas cause, you know, and people say, well, what are you giving money to the homeless for? They're only going to spend it on drugs. I said, no, it doesn't. I said, the money that I give or anything I do towards Barnabas goes towards shelter, clothing, food and education to get them off drugs. Because I've been there and I've done it, and I can relate to these people. When you're that low down, like these people obviously are, sat on street corners freezing, hungry and everything like that, with no families to look after them and nothing like that. I've not been on a street corner, but I've been there. I've been there and I've done the whole lot. So I want to try and, you know, help people, because I mean, nobody's going to help these unless someone like me does, or Barnabas does and stuff like that. So it's where people say the homeless may know we shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be doing that. You know, they'll get a left hook off me, if to, you know, because I feel the complete opposite. I think we should be doing more with these people with drug problems that haven't got people to help them, yeah?
Last year, Christmas Day, me and my family had Christmas dinner in the city centre in Albert Square. We parked up on the edge of town and walked in, and I've never seen anything like it. It was a really nasty weather. It was like, you know, grey, blustery. And the only people in the city centre were the homeless. There was just nobody about. And it really brought it on to how intense the problem is. Unfortunately, we've got the Mayor, Andy Burnham, who's doing his best to correct it over the years, so hopefully that'll get better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Couple more things before we get off. If I was to ask you, Ricky, who are your favourite humans of Manchester ever, who would they be?
It's very hard. It's very hard to say. There's been so many. But the only, you know, ones I can relate to are, you know, the peoples that, you know, that have, the people that have come from council estates and that have become successful, and there's no bigger role models. Recent, you know, Mancunian that has really made me stand up and take note is Tyson Fury, what he's done in recent weeks. You know, we saw his fight in the United States against Deontay Wilder when he fought for the world heavyweight title in Los Angeles. I mean, Tyson was at everything very similar. I can relate to it a lot. Very similar in many ways. You know, that Tyson was success on top of the world, beat Klitschko, was the undisputed world heavyweight champion. And then he started having loads of problems, you know, with drink and drugs and mental health and all these problems. And what he's done on this comeback. I used to go in Manchester and I used to be having a pint, and I'd see him in the pubs around Manchester, and he'd say, "I'm getting in the gym next week, Rick." And I'd look at him and I'd look at the size of him and I'd think, you know what? I hope you're right, Tyson, but I don't share your enthusiasm here, mate. I think you're talking from your backside. But by God, has he proved me wrong. And, you know, to after 2 years, you know, to lose 10 stone in weight, 10 stone in weight, that's the weight I used to fight at. Yeah. He's lost it. And he had the problems between his ears with the drink and the drugs and the mental health and everything. And he just had two comeback fights, went over to the United States, fought Deontay Wilder. I think he was it 39 fights unbeaten, 38 knockouts or something like that. What a formidable record. And did what he did with everything he's gone through. And that second knockdown to get up from. And he got up and he said, "I just wanted to prove, you know, that, you know, if I can get through what I've done with mental health and this and that and all the rest of it, you can do the same." And that was inspirational, you know, for me. If boxers have go through all this stuff, you know, you shouldn't be so shocked when you're going through it, because it happens to us all.
These tough fellas.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. I think Tyson is certainly one of my recent heroes. But anyone who's successful that's come from the Cowboys, Nolan, Liam Gallagher, who's proved that, you know, they didn't just become successful in Manchester on the world stage, Madison Square Garden and places like that. They've done the whole lot. Yeah. And it's people like that have come from nothing and been success. And I can't label it out one person from Manchester. I think it's all of them that have turned around and showed that never-die attitude that, you know, even if you come from the council state, you've got nothing, you can fight your way out, whether it's with a guitar, whether it's with a boxing glove or anything. Yeah, and you can make something of yourself.
You know, you could have on your list of humans of Manchester, because he came here to see you, Muhammad Ali.
Absolutely.
Is this the actual room that he came to, by any chance?
This was the actual room that he came to.
So Muhammad Ali's been in this room.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm having that. Did he mention me?
It was in funny, but I mean, you know, inspirational people. He could be the inspirational people for any city in the world, because they pulled up in the car park, and you know, can you imagine the streets where they were all up the lampposts, they were all standing on the cars, they were everywhere, as you can imagine. And Muhammad Ali came in, and he was of bad health at the time. Mm. And he got out of the minibus, and they went to put him in a wheelchair, and he threw the wheelchair to one side, and he went, "Do not put me in a wheelchair," and wheel me into Ricky Hatton's gym. And I thought, oh my God, Muhammad Ali even knows me, you know what I mean? And he come in, and he couldn't speak. You could see he was poorly and everything like that. Mm. But we had gold kids in from the local area, and we had the pictures with him. We had the council in from the Tameside area, and he had pictures with the kids, and he took time and everything. And you could see he was poorly, and that's you know, that's inspiration yourself, because yeah. I mean, I'd just got past all my bad times. But, you know, you look at something with Muhammad Ali or that, you think, what the hell have I been moaning about all these years, when you see someone like that and still shows the drive and fight in him that he was doing? Inspirational stuff, yeah.
I've got a little boy called Cassius. He'll never box like Muhammad Ali, but he dances like him. He's a dancer.
He's a shuffler, is he? Yeah.
Right, before we go, Ricky, describe Manchester in three words.
I would say the people's city. Three words. And to be honest, you know, we've had so many things go wrong, you know, in Manchester, like all cities have. But I think, you know, we've talked about inspirational characters and inspirational people. I think there's only one thing you have to do, you know, when things go wrong in the city or in any of your cities, is for me to just look at the people and the spirit of the people. And it doesn't matter, you know, how many tragedies we have, how many bombs go off, or how many people try to hurt us. As long as you've got that spirit, we'll always win.
Floyd Mayweather Jr., after he beat in 2007, said, "Ricky Hatton is one tough fighter. He's still a champion in my eyes." And I think that reflects the way that all British sports fans feel about you. He's still a champion in our eyes. I think he always will be. Ricky Hatton, thank you for being a human of XS Manchester.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Ricky Hatton. Make sure you join us next week, where I'll be speaking to Park Life and Warehouse Project founder Sasha Lloyd, just before the clubbing institution's last ever New Year's Eve at Store Street. Don't forget to follow us on social media. We are at Humans XS, and subscribe to Humans of XS Manchester. Rate us. Feel free to leave us a comment as well. It's always nice to hear your feedback. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.